Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
So I enjoy the conversation and even looking at the questions like, okay, there is a way actually of this being a process. So it's not just something that I do, because if it is my firm's brand, it needs to be bigger than me. Again, it goes back to that, right? So I enjoy doing it, having to really figure it out. What's the process and what's the thinking, what's the structure of it, and why, and how does that work or doesn't? So thank you for that.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. When you walk into a new space, what do you notice first? The smell, the knickknacks on the shelves, the layout, the color of the walls, or a terracotta, an ornament, a double hung window? How do you feel in the space? What about a community space? Do you ever wonder if a space is inclusive? Well, we talked last week a little bit with Damaris Hollingsworth, a multicultural architect and a really innovative thought leader. And the feelings are really important behind how someone feels in that space and asking somebody how they feel in the space and little ways that you can find ways to include people from all cultures. So we learned how early challenges led Damaris to develop grit and grace as she became who she is today, which is a multicultural architect designing inclusive and equitable community spaces. She's dedicated to creating sustainable spaces and places that remain relevant through the shifts of demographics and economics, aka inclusive and equitable spaces. She has many credentials behind her name, and Damaris is originally from São Paulo, Brazil. She founded Design by Milo in 2018 and co-founded the Design Shop, which connects students of colors with mentors in the design field and the Minnesota chapter of the National Organization in Minority Architects. Damaris won a Young Architect Award and many other awards. She's got a fantastic TED Talk on her website that you should really check out. With vibrancy and grace, Damaris is poised to expand the reach of inclusive architecture to promote social justice and beautify all of our communities. Her design solutions are deeply rooted in the people. That's why she spends a lot of time understanding the populations that are occupying different spaces while responding to both the community values and economic realities. Her resiliency inspires all around her to be productive and stay organized. How do you manage it? You're a mother of how many?
One child.
One child.
Who is worth three. She's plenty.
And you've also got several employees.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Five employees.
Four employees, five with myself and three contractors, yeah.
Well, welcome to We Mentor Mondays.
Thank
I'm just
you.
Really excited to understand how design influences our behavior and learn a little bit more, too, about how your aspirations and how equitable design and inclusion really are important, and we pick them up and we need to be more sensitive about how we're designing spaces.
Yep.
So Design by Milo, you say on your website, is founded in, I quote, founded in the belief that the built environment needs to do more than addressing the functional needs of proposed spaces. Our clients benefit from a holistic approach to all that we do. Because places and spaces must also speak to the values of global engagement, cultural competency, inclusion, sustainability, and human performance, your benefit doesn't stop when the project is complete. How does design influence our behavior?
I think there are a few ways, right? One of the ways is that science has already proven, which is color, textures, compositions, all of that. One example I used last time we talked was church, the cathedrals, right? When you walk into a cathedral and you look up and you feel like, that I feel so small and God so big.
Yeah.
It was by design. You were supposed to feel that way. The yeah. beauty, the texture, the colors, the design on the ceiling that makes you look up. And when you do that, you sense your small size. All by design. It's nothing accidental. So all those things matter and creates a reaction, right? So when you perceive things like color, texture, then you feel something about it, right?
Yes.
And you react to the way you feel. And that's why the design and the built product or the environment influences behavior, because behavior is nothing but your reaction, right? You act based on that. So if you feel afraid, you act from a place of fear.
Yeah.
If you feel inspired, you act from a place of inspiration. If you feel not welcome, mm-hmm. you act from that place. Protective, defensive. So that is how influence behavior, because we are, our behavior is nothing but us reacting to things we feel.
Yeah. So if we broke down each of the values and we started with global engagement, tell us a little bit more mm-hmm. of the value and also the functional part of that.
Mm-hmm. So like when we talk about global engagement, we're talking about specifically a design that doesn't assume that one size fits all.
Yeah.
It's a design that is going to need to know you, right? Mm-hmm. If I am designing, for instance, for communities in South Minneapolis,
yeah.
I can't design if I don't know. I can't design by the book a building that meets building code, zoning requirements, and programmatic needs, meaning 50 apartments, 10,000 square feet of retail, a community space, an office. I can do that. Mm-hmm. But if I want my design to reflect the culture, the people, the aspirations of that community where it's going to be sitting on, I need to know the people. And that's why I say community engagement. It's not, the engagement itself is not the practice. Our engagement is the result of us knowing the community. So we engage with it.
Yeah.
So then it's almost like I joke because I have a partner that does community engagement with the Cultural on the Center. We always partner in projects to do because they are very community-rooted organization. And they always help me lead the process. They always lead the process from the human perspective, what I'm in the physical design perspective. And he says, we can be engaged if you don't know people, right? How can we be engaged? I then say, okay, we should use courtship then. Because it's almost like dating and engagement. Like, you don't get engaged right away. You are getting to know the people.
Right.
So it's really a courtship thing, like I'm knowing you and knowing me. So then we can be engaged on this purpose of let's do something that reflects you. Let me use my skills and my tools, what I have learned, where my I believe my calling is to serve that. But I won't be able to know what that is unless I spend time with you and I learn about your culture. The things that you express as things that bring you memories of peace and inclusivity and welcoming and safety.
Yeah.
Because then I would design to my own, right?
Yeah.
Or to a textbook, which doesn't serve them because they likely didn't write textbooks, especially when talking about communities of color, immigrant communities. They definitely did not write textbooks. So we definitely won't be reflecting them. So that's why that time of learning is so important. And when you do a design that is rooted in global engagement, that means that I want to know all the parts. I want to know where you come from, what you come from, where everybody came from. How do you practice the things you do? How do you, what's your day? What's your experience with faith, worship, education, family?
Yeah.
And then we can propose something that is more in line with it. It's never one size fits all. And it's also never one very custom made solution.
Yeah.
It has to be something that is adaptable and is flexible and is multi-purpose and multi-cultural, right? Because we have to serve more than one group in most cases nowadays.
That dovetails with cultural competency.
Yes.
So how do you define that in a space?
I think a cultural competency is more about the team and the approach. Like, for instance, when we are talking about, I'm going to give you because I feel like this part of what I do is very subjective.
Okay.
And it's not. So I like giving examples. For instance, when you're designing for communities, East African communities, for instance, right?
Yeah.
There is 90% of my clients are East African. And there is this thing about the way they handle business, the way they do business and the economics. It's not the way we do it. I am so okay taking a photo of a check and pushing a button in my phone and trusting is has been deposited. That is not part of that culture. They're like, they're going to walk to you and give you the check in your hands, not the post office. Why should I trust that? Or a photo of like, no. So all of those, when you design this big site in South Minneapolis, the Wells Fargo site, right? So they wanted the branch back, of course, because it was burned down during the riots and they needed a drive-through. Right. And in the
in
whole
the George,
city.
George Floyd area, yeah. So 26th yeah. and like Lake
yeah.
and...
Yeah, it was Lake and Nicolette.
Lake, yeah.
So the city planning, the city zoning for now does not allow drive-throughs in the urban core. We were able to get grandfathered in for the, because it was there before, but there were some community members against it. And that is part of the process of when I talk about cultural sensitivity is understand the community you're serving.
Yeah.
They go cash business all day along Lake Street. They have to come to the bank. They have 3-4 kids in the car. It's winter. They need drive-thrus. It's not like, but nobody uses drive-thru anymore. Who even goes to the bank? That is what I talk about, cultural sensitivity.
Yeah.
You're not talking about every size fits one. You need to understand the different ways people live their lives. The people practice their business, their faith, their everything differently.
Yeah.
So for us to believe in that everybody's a millennial, middle-class millennial,
right.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we won that fight and we have permission to build the drive-thru because it's part of understanding the culture of the people.
Yeah.
Who you're serving, and you design to it.
And that's part of inclusion, right?
Exactly.
Including their needs.
And their voices and their needs and their practice and everything, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And how does sustainability fit in with that dynamic?
So, Susan, I don't know if you know much about it, but if you want to get curious, look about the impacts of the global warming and the non-sustainable practices.
Yeah.
It's much heavier on lower-income communities, right? Mm. Because the floods, because all of that is much bigger. And I can, even when you're talking about, I remember Texas, right? Let's not get politics. But when Texas happened last year, the whole people were traveling to other countries, right? When to stay cool or some other places. When even pandemic happened, people were traveling to their compound, someplace to be isolated. So all the impacts
And they were delayed in getting their taxes in.
Exactly. And then also, how many of low-income families have the option to break if it is flooding or where they live and go to the beach house? Like, all those things is so much more impactful in lower-income neighborhoods and local communities. So sustainability on itself is a way of inclusivity. Mm. If you're being responsible when you're designing a building that is respectful to Mother Earth, because she's going to get back at you as a good mom, I would. So I feel like that is just social responsibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Design so global warming will, because it is going to hurt the most vulnerable first, foremost. And then when you talk about human performance, if anyone who has worked in an office can tell, right? Especially us women with our summer dresses in the winter. Do you feel like staying in the office and working when you're freezing?
No.
Because the AC is 68, because it is designed for men with suit and tie and not for us with dresses and open toes. You crunch your back, you have back pain. You just want to get out of there. You're not focused, you're grumpy. So all of that reduces your performance, trust me. There has, and again, this is another one that science has proven. There are numbers backing this up. When you are in a comfortable environment with natural light, views are so important.
Yeah.
When you even a slight view of nature or outside, it grounds you.
Totally. That's why people gravitate toward water too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of that it has a huge impact on performance. You will focus more, you're more creative, you are more productive. And when you talk about if nothing matters, if you don't care about the people, how you feel, care about turnaround costs. If you're, or the cost of inefficiencies, right? As a business owner, it costs a lot of money to have unproductive staff and to have unhappy people who leave.
Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of building up in like St. Louis Park, which is where we're taping our conversation today. Mm-hmm. And the buildings are like, the retail buildings are like right up against the sidewalk. There's no greenery. Why do you think that was built? Every inch you can make a profit?
There is that. But also there is, from the zoning perspective, in urban centers, like urban, we call the urban cores, there is this desire to create this street, what they call the streetscape.
Yeah.
Which is the street wall. So you define public realm by establishing that ever building setback has to be either zero lot line most cases.
Yeah.
Or maximum of 8, maximum of 5 feet. To create that clear definition three-dimensionally, this is public realm, right? What they have been doing is expanding sidewalk width.
Okay.
So you have some buffer and greenery, and but then they bring the retail to the zero lot line to activate the public realm. There is the thing about eyes in the streets and activity in the streets that makes it safer. So it's a natural safety instead of policing, instead of having a security guard standing in the corner, making everybody feel unwelcome.
Yeah.
It's that thing, activity, eyes in the street. People are out. People are right there.
Yeah.
There's no loitering, like all this space for people to hang out and do nothing. So all of that is part of a design, a urban design agenda.
Okay.
That brings people closer to the streets so it's more activated and safer.
Well, I'm wondering, okay, this is way, you know, off topic, but I remember when we used to fly and we would go to the airport and like people would drop us off and like stay, right? We would have,
a little lunch together,
you know, and then the person could even walk you
all the
to
way
your
to the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember I dropped off my brother for his honeymoon. And we had several hours of driving. And I remember I had to quickly park the car. We were running a little bit late, but I was able to run through the airport. I wasn't even going on the flight. I just wanted to see them off. And I just remember running through the airport. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, the fun is really out of that. And I'm just thinking that we need more creativity in, because I don't feel okay at the airport anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way the security's set up.
Since 9/11, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And our shoes are all over the place, and then
clothes,
we're pushed
and
through.
Everything. And my hair is always searched. Because I could be hiding something, might be big.
Your
goofy.
Hair is searched?
Oh, yes. I mean, ask every black woman.
Oh, my God.
That's a whole other,
I didn't know that.
Whole other podcast episode. Hair like mine, yes, it's searched.
Oh.
Because God knows what I could be carrying here. My big, poofy, curly head.
Oh, my God.
So all
so
of that stuff.
Like
and
invasive.
Usually they're very...
Yeah.
Since George Floyd, though, assassination, though, a lot of those cultural, we call the microaggressions, right?
Yeah.
Got brought up to surface. And now people apologize. They can tell they're extremely apologetic for doing it. Like, I have to, like, go for it. But... It is crazy to me.
I got beautiful hair. Go for it.
Just don't mess up my curl pattern.
I got my gel in there.
Exactly. But that is part of, it does not make you feel welcome, comfortable, safe, or respected. Really, it is respectful. It really is respectful.
Yeah,
right?
I think our security protocol has lost our level. We've lost the level of respect that we deserve.
The way some people do it. But you could do it in a way that doesn't make you feel violated.
Right.
Some people do it that way. They apologize. They take you in on the side. And they literally, I have to do this because whatever. Some folks just make you feel like you did something bad.
Yeah.
And the way it's done is so, I guess, violating and disrespectful.
Yeah. And even like our Capitol buildings too, with the security protocols, it just doesn't make you feel, like, you know.
You're guilty to begin with,
guilty,
right?
Guilty, yeah. Just as you're going through the building.
Until you prove it otherwise, yeah.
Anyways, I know that's, it is
sort of part of design, but it's mostly part of security, national security. And I feel like my peers, I don't design airports, but there are some firms in town who do. And it is hard. It's a very hard job to do.
Yeah, because how do you have those elements in there of, you know, and the cultural sensitivities and not making everybody feel...
Oh, you need to redesign the people for that part. Because that's the thing. If you notice airports, and then, like I just been recently to Arizona, for instance, the Phoenix airport. When you pass all that, the experience being created... past security is pretty great.
Yeah, right.
It's almost it's like a mall.
It's like all of a sudden you made it to the promised land.
It's skylights and all that stuff. But passing that thing is very hostile. And I think that is a people thing, right? If I flag you just because you look different, it's nothing the design. It's the people. We design the people, I joke, because...
Yeah.
It is a bias that is deeper than we think it is.
Yeah, I think I'm... more aware of it every single day. Like mm-hmm. there's something new about it, or like in our conversation here about, mm-hmm. you know, cultural competency within the design
yeah.
of designing around the people's spaces and making sure that it's sustainable. So how can you tell when a community space has all five values? I know that's kind of a big question.
I can wish that it has, right? I can design for it to have, but I think I cannot tell that I accomplished that until the space is being used. And the users will tell. They won't be able to likely, again, put a finger on it and say, oh, I see how this is. That thing over there is what makes me feel this way. But yeah. there is a sense of interaction, a sense of interaction with the space and with each other, or yeah. a sense of calmness. Or yeah, I like coming here. I come here all the time. Yeah. I just sit here and I do my work. Like if, when I have a space in between things, that's what I got. Well, why?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's nice and it's bright and yeah. it's comfortable. It's beautiful. The furniture is nice. And so all those things are the things that you come back to check. Did you deliver? And that they are, again, the International Pavilion is one of those stories that every time I talk to folks from the school, I haven't been there in a long time. They say, oh my God, that place is hot. Like kids come to it and imagine the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
International students couldn't go home. So that was right. their little hub, a place to go and cook out with the friends and see some humans and interact in a way. So it became more and more like home.
Mm,
and that was yeah. one of the things we talked about too. It has to feel like home because home is way too far.
Yeah.
We then got to go home every holiday, every long weekend. So you don't know until the people are using it.
Yeah.
And it feels right. And yeah. then they just hang out there, just to hang out there. And then if you come ask, like, why do you come here at the time? I don't know. It's like, it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice views and the light is good. And they will name things like that. The light is good or the furniture is nice. And
yeah.
It's the temperature, all that stuff. There's no wind draft. Like all those things that we think through from a technical perspective, but also the things that we just hope that the composition is going to do, right?
Yeah.
Creating some more intimate niches in the corners. Like, there's this very nicely defined corner here that you can just take a book and sit down, and there's a more open. So you go from private to more public.
Yeah.
Creating all those opportunities and options for people to use the space. But until they are using it,
oh.
you, I always hope so. And then I love going back and seeing it happy, working. And it doesn't, then you need to fix for next time.
Yeah. You're in Lifetime Work West End in St. Louis Park, and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful new space.
Yep.
It's on the 9th floor, not too far as Lifetime Fitness. What made you decide, because when I think of a co-working space, I'm not thinking of bringing like very many staff, but you've got 4 full-time besides you and some other contractors that yep. you work with.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you decide a co-working space was really a nice dimension for Design by Milo?
So when I started my business, I started from my kitchen, but I needed to have an address, right? Because as you know, when yeah. you say I have a business and people ask for a website, and people do that. I didn't realize how many people actually Google it to find out where's your address. And they see an apartment building or they see a home, a single family home. You're just not real. Somehow you're not validated by it. So yeah. I started my business from my home. But I had what they call a virtual membership at a co-working out of downtown.
Okay.
And so I had all these levels of affordability from my kitchen, but with a virtual address, which means it's in my website and there's even a number you can call. They answer as Design by Melo and transfer to my cell phone. So it makes me authentic. I'm legit. And then the next, which is the cheapest membership option for it. It was not Lifetime before. It was a different co-working. From there, there's a lounge membership, which is like, I don't have a desk assigned. I just can come in and work. I went from that so I could be with some people. But that was the thing. I was like, I don't see anybody because it was one of the most traditional co-working spaces. One of the oldest, the most, like the original ones, all the school style. There's no co-working. There's a bunch of private offices.
Yeah, right.
That people rent. And in the lounge,
and then
it's just
you
like,
share like, yeah, a lounge or a
but then the front desk
or
person's there and me. Nobody's working there.
Yeah.
And I call myself a chronic extrovert. I need human interaction. Even if it's like in a coffee shop that I don't know you. I'm not going to talk to you. You're not going to talk to me, but you're there.
Yeah, right.
And that energy feeds me.
Mm-hmm.
I start going to coffee shops all the time.
Okay.
And I realized I'm spending so much money because I go to a coffee shop and I can't sit there and not buy.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm being abusive.
Right. Yeah.
So I buy coffee every 2 hours and I buy lunch and I buy a snack because I feel like I need to spend money because I'm sitting here all day.
Yeah.
So then I start doing the math, like, I'm spending more money in coffee shop plus the membership over there for the address.
Yeah.
Then I'll be spending a real co-working like last time. They actually, people actually co-work.
Yeah.
So that was my thing about the affordability. Then the next time I was able to take another step, I decided to move to Lifetime because I had been here when they just were just building it.
Yeah.
And it's alive. It's alive. Folks are always hanging out in the kitchen, they got the solarium and the desks in front. I'm like, you see people. I come from big farms, right? I never worked in a small farm. I come from like 100 people, 200 people farm.
Okay.
So that sense of being just me was like, it's not inspiring. It does not get me excited.
Yeah.
So when I'm in the co-working space, even though they're not my co-workers, they're humans.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm being fed of their energy. And that's why
you're
co-working.
That
and it's also very affordable. If you think about the quality of the space, like you said, it's a very nice space. I have conference rooms, data. I have all of this AV stuff that costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
It cost me so much to build something like this for myself.
Yeah.
And here I pay a very nominal fee, if you think about it, to have all these amenities.
Yeah.
And just borrow a desk.
Yeah, right.
Or rent a desk. And I get to see humans all day.
That's terrific. So what aspirations do you have for this year regarding the projects and your creative art, endeavors?
I don't say fortunate, because I just heard from a friend of mine, when you say something fortunate or unfortunate, it was not planned, right? Fortunately, this happened. No, it was all thought through. But in my case, I cannot say fortunately, because it was not also like that. It was very well invested in, and I dedicated myself to be part of this new shift, right? That we are now serving communities of color. You're now serving the groups that have never been served and looked at. So I want to continue to grow in that way. I want to continue to be seen as this architect.
Yeah. When did that shift?
George Floyd's assassination.
Oh, it did?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I have been out there talking about equity and whatever for a long time, because when I started trying to get my career, when I got to RSP here and I started to climb the ladder, and Phoenix was a nice ladder. I had support from all sides.
Yeah.
When I got here in the big office.
You say in your video that
in my TEDx,
you had a picture of what used to be a boardroom. Yeah, all white,
older white
guys.
Man, yes.
Yeah.
And then
the new one.
Yes.
And what was your impression with that?
So when I first time I had a meeting with the executive team at Thor, which was a black-owned contractor company, I was there for an interview. One of the things I learned about Thor later when I was there, that there was everything was impromptu anything, right? Everything was like, oh yeah, by the way, let's just meet the board. So then I was there for an interview, and then Ravi Norman, the CEO at the time, got excited about our conversation. Let me go grab so-and-so. And suddenly all the executives were walking in to meet me briefly. But I'm like sitting there watching like the door, like literally like my head going on the side.
Back and forth.
Black woman, black man, black woman, white man, like what? This is active team. So it was like a thing of, I want to giggle, but I also have this cry in my heart, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And it felt so comforting.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. It was an interview. Remember, I was in a job interview. I was asking for money and salary and benefits and position. So it was not like a comfortable, like super friendly. It was friendly, but it was not like, I was not in my easy spot, right? Because I am very good at asking money for other things. Like for myself, So I was like in this situation of formal.
Yeah.
And then the feeling of, it was easy. It felt easy.
Yeah, like you
and
didn't have to work at it.
Yes, and I don't have to prove myself. That was my first thought. I don't have to prove myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to be believed in because these are my people.
Yeah.
And that felt really comfortable, comforting and comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's why the joke I make in my TEDx, like, I thought, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's how white people feel.
Right.
All the time, because they're always surrounded by their people. They don't have to prove themselves. They are given the benefit of the doubt. So they know they're not starting from minus 200. They are starting zero at least, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to prove you anything.
Yeah.
I'm not wrong to begin with.
Right.
This because I'm a black woman, foreign, with an accent. So comfortable.
Yeah.
and felt safe.
Yeah.
And that feeling was like, wow, I got it. If I was white, I would try to protect that too. That was the joke to myself. That I was like, this is good. I like it, how it feels.
Yeah.
No wonder they protect it. Mm. But let's be comfortable and start sharing. So I felt like it was almost like a joke in an emotional moment at the same time in my head.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it like, oh my gosh, this feels good.
Yeah.
And I wanted to protect that. Like we do, because it feels so safe for the first time.
Yeah. Wow. That was really eye-opening for you too. So what aspirations do you have for your staff?
I have been really... So the reason why I started my firm, it was not because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Actually, I did not want to be an entrepreneur. A year before I started my firm, somebody asked me, is this your stepping stone before you go do your dream? Like, what is my dream? To have your own firm? Like, why would I want that? I literally answered like, why would I want to have my own business?
Yeah.
I did not. I wanted to. I always thought for the longest time. I studied RSP Architects for 9 years. So for 7 of those years, I thought, I knew for a fact that I was going to get promoted and promoted. I will become a principal and a partner, and I will be, that's how I retire, as a partner, principal architect at RSP.
Yeah.
Because everything they did for me, I'm forever grateful, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Then I started realizing, well, it's not that simple. There's some politics to play here. So, but I never wanted to have my firm. I wanted to be in a firm who would let me be.
Yeah.
Who let me do the things I do now. So I did not plan to be an entrepreneur. I just decided to be one when Thor was going out of business, and I felt like, holy crap, I had to go find a job. And I remember that environment. I don't want to go back there. So what do I do?
Yeah, you create your own.
I create your own. Again, like when I was 14, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's right. Going to give it to you. Go get it. Go
yeah,
do it.
Right.
And I was not prepared financially. I did not know enough business. I just like, I'm just going to go for it. And I'm going to learn like language. Like English, I'll learn it.
Yeah.
I learn in the way. In
as
the,
you go.
As you go. So then, if I am here to create something I never found, the same is true for a lot of women of color, a lot of people of color, BIPOC men and women, they are not finding nurturing spaces where they can be authentic and grow.
Yeah.
So that's my goal, that I can actually continue to create that, not just for myself, because it's easy to get busy, you know, being productive and being effective, especially getting all these big projects and high-profile projects we are getting, to forget about, so what are we doing here? We are creating this space that has, it's not out there.
Yeah.
So that is the goal that my team that I continue to, it's hard to find the right fit for this, right? We are in a second or third round of shifting and adapting and getting new people. I have a very good base team right now that are helping me do that. So we are careful who stays in the team, who is in the team, who is the right fit, because we want to, okay, who makes the environment and hostile? It's not, again, the seat, the chair in your office. It's the person sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
So we right. need to make sure that we hire the right people.
It's the right person yeah. in the chair.
So that's my goal, that we can continue to create the environment. And then my staff that I have here now, that has really helped me build that, so that I can keep growing. We can keep growing to do bigger and better for ourselves and for the community and thrive.
Yeah. Leave your mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A big one.
Exactly.
So I've just got a couple other questions. Where have you found the best resources for building your business?
Man, so when I started my business, that was in the heels of Thor going out of business, right? So I remember when they have a meeting with the leadership of Thor and they say, yeah, we're not making it, so you guys can have 3 months to plan what you're going to do. If you want a job, we can help you find one, make a call, reference letter, whatever. Then a couple of the executive team members told me like, why would you get a job? Like, we can't, you should do this, right? Mm. And I'm like, but I have a kid. I was recently divorced. I was like, yeah, I have a kid. I can't. Paycheck. I need a paycheck, right? Yeah. And then the news start sharing about Thor. And then I get calls from big farmers in town. I say, hey, we heard, I'm sorry. If you need a place, if you need to go somewhere, we make room for you. So that made me feel like sick to my stomach instead of peaceful.
Oh.
Because I was like, that is the right thing to choose. Because I have a paycheck. I have a nice...
Right, it's stability.
But my whole entire system Beam. Is telling me like...
Now's the be, time to yeah. leap.
So I decided to go with the peace, right? I always say I follow my peace because... To think about a nice, decent job with a big paycheck and benefits gave me stomachache. the peace of going to the thought of going to do my business gave me so much peace, which was ridiculous. I always say that was the first time I understood my Bible school verse saying the peace that surpasses understanding. Like, that's what it means. But it makes no sense. That peace makes no sense. But it gives you so much peace. And I couldn't understand it. But yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to follow my peace. Because every time I didn't, I regret it. Yeah. So I followed the peace with no money and no planning. And then I started scrambling to figure out how I'm going to fund this. Because you don't get, not even because I'm a Black woman, but a service business don't get financed.
Right, right.
Because what are they going to take from you if you screw up?
Right.
Like your brain? Like, I have a computer and ideas in my head. So bank look at me like,
yeah.
Well, come back in 2 years with a nice balance sheet.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you finance you. So I started like cracking up my credit cards. And again, I don't know who to ask for help. I know banks won't help me. Who am I going to ask? Who am I going to bother? I'm that person too. I like to give you a lot, but I'm not comfortable receiving.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm disturbing or whatever. So I met a center, which is my partner for community engagement now.
Oh.
And one of the things they do is to invest in Black women business. Not invest money, but invest technical assistance. And Anthony Taylor started talking to me about, why aren't you bigger? Like, why? I know your work now. Then he started learning about my work. Like, you should be doing like all this stuff. And like, because I need staff to do that. And to get staff, I need to have cash flow. I had to have.
Yeah.
Why don't you have those? Like, so then
I'm getting to work on them.
So he started working with me on balance sheet and on projections on a business plan. Mm. And so Anthony Taylor was the first person and introduced me to NDC, the Neighborhood Development Center, Renee Brown. So Renee was like the person that looked at me. She had not seen my business plan from NDC. And she decided like, you're going places. And I'm going to be the one that's going to be supporting you. So figure it out. She assigned me a team member from NDC, like help her out, like figure it out what she needs. And that was business plan, was a projection. It was like painful for me because that, again, I'm a creative.
Yeah, right.
And I just wanted to punch. And I told him like, I'm going to likely be grumpy and I'm going to not like you. And I told that to Anthony and to them. Like, I'm not going to like you. I don't really like you very much right now.
Yeah.
But you, he's like a person. I told them exactly this. My personal trainer. You are like a personal trainer. I'm going to want to cuss you out when I'm doing. But you're not supposed to go away.
Yeah.
You're supposed to push me harder. But just so you know, I'm going to really look at you like I'm going to choke you.
Yeah.
Because you asked me to do a projection for 3 years. What? I want to go design a building, for Christ's sake. So that was painful for me in the beginning. But once I got to understand, what it was for me was painful because it felt tedious.
Yeah.
And felt like focus on this. When I started realizing how much that played into me knowing my own business.
Yeah, it really,
oh, it became
it's
fun.
Everything.
And then I'm like, oh my gosh, like,
I can control this.
Exactly. Yeah. So then I started liking it. So then from there was an easier journey down the road. And of course, they kept looking at me. Yeah, I told you, you acted like it. And that's when I started getting financing.
I see.
It was almost 2 years later.
Okay.
Anthony Taylor, Renee with NDC, Renee Dossi, NDC, and her team, Fu Hang. And those guys were like shoulder to shoulder with me, helped me creating this structure.
Fantastic.
That prepared me for Sunrise Bank a few months later to finance my business.
Nice.
So I could hire people, grow the team, and say yes to big projects.
Yeah.
So it was a constellation of hands.
Yeah. And now you're turning around the mentoring with Design Shop.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how that works.
So Active Design Shop, we founded in 2017. I was the co-founder of the local chapter for NOMA. NOMA is a national organization of minority architects. There's a group here in town that had been having this organization, the kind of a coalition of Black architects for 2 decades, but they had kind of died down. So then when I showed up in the picture here in Minnesota, one of them was like, hey, you're the new blood. Don't you want to pick it up and bring it back to life? And instead of being the Assembly of Architects, create a chapter for NOMA, because now it has an association with a national organization.
Yeah.
So I did that in 17. We worked the bylaws and all of that. And part of when I was the president for the first 2 years, and one of the things I wanted to do was to include something that related to kids and to pipeline. Because when you think about professional architecture, we have currently about 110,000 architects in the country, licensed architects in the country. 2%, less than 2% of those are Black architects. Oh. And 530 some are black women architects. Mm. You go to the schools, it's a little better, but not all that better, the numbers. Mm. When you go to the career path, you start, let's say you start at a certain number and the number keeps dropping because our career is not, it's very white men dominated and very genderist and very racist. Let's just be honest about it.
Yeah.
The way things are done is very not friendly, not inclusive at all. So when I started thinking about, we can't, if there's not enough people in school or in a profession to, we need to go
to
grab them. Yes. In the beginning. So we started doing the design shop as a way to, a lot of black kids don't even know architects exist, right?
Yeah.
Why would they?
Yeah.
They go to the doctor, they go to the dentist, they go to school. They see folks in the everyday. It's not an architect. They go to buildings every day. But nobody is highlighting about, to them like, you know what? Somebody actually designed this.
Yeah, right.
And now we start to go to schools and partnering with organizations that already work with teenagers and high schoolers. And they recruit them. Mm. The one that had already some interesting arts or composition or whatever. And then they would bring them to us and we do the 12-week program. So we did that 2 years and then pandemic hit.
Okay.
So we haven't gone back yet. But it was really a way for kids to even know design professional exist.
Yeah.
And then all the mentors in the team, majority of mentors in the team was all black architects.
Is that being...
Yeah, we need to bring it back
invigorated.
Whenever things become normal again.
Yeah.
Because with the schools going half or, you know, it's hard for us to find places that allow us. Because it is a 12-week every Thursday thing. So
okay.
So we're trying to wait for... until things are not more normal.
Yeah.
It might never become the same, but
yeah,
that we can interact again with the youth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Well, this has been a delight and very informative, and I'm taking a different understanding to when I look at buildings and spaces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to become that person now that keeps looking, that could be better.
That could be more inclusive.
Exactly. That could be more open. And
yeah, they need a few more words in this area to embrace people. Yeah, well, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thank you for tuning in to our wonderful conversation. I hope you got some pieces out of it for yourself. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Mon Frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And we'll see you next week. Build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.